Greetings and welcome to the AVOD. I'm Kevin Fargelon.
I'm DM.
And we're here to wrap up 90s November with two of the 90s movies of all. But before we get there, we do have some random crap to take a look at, so please join us for that. First up, I read a book!
Alright.
I know you, I know I give off a real he-can't-read vibe. But I
sometimes,
did.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, I do. I'm not ashamed of that. It's just a fact of who I am. I did read a book, though, and it is a delight, and I want to recommend it to everyone. It is called Iowati on Top. Are you familiar with the actor, TV host, and bon vivant, Richard Iowati?
I thought it was Iowati.
It's pronounced Iowati.
Iowati.
I found
all
this
right.
out by watching an interview with him. I know.
Okay.
I always thought it was Iowade too, but no, it's Iowati. All right. So,
alrighty.
He has written a book called Iowati on Top. And the premise of this book is that he is giving essentially a graduate level academic close reading of the film View from the Top. The 2000.
Oh, you've talked about this before.
Yes, but because I announced it exists. I've now read it, and it is incredible, because what he does is, and I did not expect this, so it's part analysis of the movie, part autobiographical stuff from him, and part just cruel parody of academic writing, right? Just like academic film writing that reads way too much into everything. So, you know, the thing I do. And it was a beautifully cruel parody of it. And the funny part about the book is he literally starts with the opening frame of the book, of the movie, and he is addressing the movie in chronological order, talking about each scene. And then every time he gets a digression, for example, Don't Stop Believing starts playing in the movie. And then he writes four pages, both about Journey and about the Journey cover band that plays Don't Stop Believing in the movie.
God.
Like, it is such a crazy experiment that I want everyone to give it a chance. It is just, it is one of the weirdest things I've ever read, and it's hilarious. The man is a comic genius, and I think anyone who can appreciate absurdity will love this one. Also, I found out that the movie was originally supposed to come out in November 2001, but because it was about flight attendants, they pushed it for 2 years.
Right.
Yeah. So it's one of those movies. So yeah, just an amazing thing. Iowati on Top. Check it out. All right. Next up, I believe we have a quiz.
I guess so. Oh my goodness.
I think you're ready. To what country?
I always get so nervous.
You do. You do. All right. To what country is the protagonist Rob about to move to in the film Cloverfield?
Good God. You need to pre-read these and
I do,
then
I do,
rearrange the words in,
I really do.
In order that makes sense.
I know.
So where's Rob moving to?
Yeah, in Cloverfield.
It's somewhere in Europe. Right?
Take a guess.
I want to say France.
It is not France.
No? Okay.
He's going to work in Japan.
Oh, shoot. I was so wrong.
Yeah. The film Cannibal Holocaust made use of what type of filmmaking?
Oh, that makes sense. It's a giant monster movie. Sorry, say that again.
A Cannibal Holocaust. What kind of movie is Cannibal Holocaust?
The garbage kind.
What style of filmmaking?
It's found footage.
Yes, it's found footage. It's also garbage, but that's another conversation. What is the name of the fictional nature preserve where The Village from The Village is set?
Oh, I don't know.
It is apparently the Walker Wildlife Preserve.
Hmm. Oh, sure. Okay.
In Mama, 2013, for how many years are Victoria and Lily missing?
Oh, come on. I don't know. Three.
Actually, it's five.
I was going to say five, but it seemed like too long.
No, the little one was like a baby in the car, and then she's a five-year-old when they find her.
I haven't seen this movie.
Again, she says this every time, There's an episode of the Avon where you can listen to her talking about this movie for 25 minutes.
I don't know this movie.
I know you don't think you know.
Someone else who sounds just like me.
Okay. What was the name of the criminal who becomes Chucky in Child's Play?
Oh, shit. I know this.
You do know
this. Come on, brain.
You got it. Come on.
Oh, no.
This is getting very
embarrassing. Three names, obviously.
Obviously. It's a serial killer.
Shit.
Gotta have the three names in there.
Everyone has three names. Come on.
Some people have four.
Ugh, it's not coming to me. Damn it.
I'll tell you. Charles Lee Ray. Because he, you know, he's named Chucky.
Yeah, thanks.
I thought that might help. I was obviously incorrect, and I apologize. All right. Next up, what medical procedure does La Femme try to perform using scissors inside?
I believe it's a cesarean.
That is correct. It might be a garbage movie, but you've remembered the plot accurately.
There's not much to remember.
That's true. Like, a woman trying to perform a C-section with a pair of scissors is literally the whole movie.
That's the whole movie. Yeah.
There's just a little bit of stuff in between her pulling out a pair of scissors and finally doing the C-section. All right. Not a great showing today, but you can still be proud of yourself for getting a bunch of those.
No, you
probably shouldn't be proud of yourself. I was just trying to be nice. All right. Let's move on to our list, which I believe we have.
Yeah, so today's list is from IndieWire, and it is 6 great films about female obsession.
Oh, nice.
So are we counting down or up? I think we're just counting.
I love counting.
So the list begins with Single White Female.
Oh. Spoiler alert, that's one of the movies we're talking about in a bit.
Later. So we'll just move on.
Yeah.
To a film called Breathe.
Oh, what's this?
This is a French movie. And I have a problem with the person who wrote this. Because they write, you know, these two girls may not be engaged in a sexual relationship. But it's like, why does it have to be a sexual? It's like about teen lust, I suppose.
Okay.
Or teen obsession.
Right.
And it just becomes like this very obsessive friendship between these two teen girls. I'm like, why does it have to be sexual? Is it because they're teen girls? Is it because it's a French movie? Like,
both of those things are accurate. That is what I'm just saying. That is, you have accurately pointed out why they think it has to be sexual. Those are the two reasons. You're right, but that is why. Oh God. Yeah. All right. I've not heard of this. When's it from?
I don't know.
Okay.
There's no date on it.
Oh, that's weird. All right, next up.
Next, Neon Demon, which did not enjoy.
No, I didn't like it a lot, but you can't deny that it's about obsession.
I guess. Honestly, I don't remember a lot about this movie because I didn't enjoy it, so why bother remembering?
Well,
I wish I could I wish I could purge all the movies I hated from my brain, but apparently this one just
You've already succeeded once.
You, it didn't happen.
I know.
Didn't see it.
All right, next up.
Next is Whatever Happened to Baby Jane?
That's a really good movie.
I haven't seen those.
Oh, you haven't seen it? Totally worth watching.
No.
Like, it's kind of disgusting, and it's really intense to watch, but I like that movie a lot. I think they're both fantastic in it. I mean, it's very much a sleazy potboiler, but like, high-quality sleazy potboiler. Weird way to describe that now that I say that out loud. Stand by it, though. All right.
Next is Notes on a Scandal.
Oh, why is that title familiar? I don't think I've seen it, but I know the title.
Came out a few years ago.
Okay.
It's Kate Blanchett and Judi Dench.
That would be why I remember it. Okay, so it was a high-profile movie. Gotcha.
Yes.
All right,
yes.
Notes on a Scandal. What does it say about it?
So, Kate Blanchett is the younger teacher. Judi Dench is the older teacher. Judi Dench wants to befriend Kate Blanchett. Kate Blanchett kind of keeps her at arm's length. Then Judi Dench finds out that Kate Blanchett is sleeping with one of her students.
Oof.
And leverages that, I guess, to have this friendship. Yeah.
That sounds creepy.
So.
Yeah. I think I'd be down for that. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Next up.
Next is Heavenly Creatures.
Oh, well, that's just a perfect film.
So, again, have not seen it.
You haven't seen Heavenly Creatures?
No, and I don't know anything about the actual, like, true life story either.
I both watched the movie and watched a documentary about the true life story. I love that movie. I think mm-hmm. Heavenly Creatures is great. And I would, like, you, again, is that Kate Blanchett again?
Kate Winslet this time.
Kate Winslet. I always get them confused because of, you know, the similar names. Kate
They're
Winslet is Titanic. Oh, they are? One is a C, one's a K?
Yes!
I didn't know. I just remember one is Titanic and one is Lord of the Rings, and I get them confused.
Kate Winslet is Titanic.
And Blanche is Lord of the Rings.
Blanche there is
you
Lord
go.
Of the Rings.
Thank you. Okay. Very helpful. But yeah, really good movie. Like, such a good movie. Adore it. Peter Jackson doing an incredible job. Melanie Lyskey's wonderful in that. Like, just a great movie all around. Like, it's a downer, and it led to a really, really bad episode of The Simpsons, but
right.
Very, very good movie.
Okay.
All right. Next up.
That's it. That's the end of the list.
That is the end of the list. Sorry.
Yes.
I assumed there would be more. I will say, though, that Female Obsession, it doesn't get covered these days as much as it should, I feel, just as a narrative device. And you can generally get a lot of good horror movies out of that premise, except when you make Inside, which is pretty bad. I wonder, are they going to keep making horror movies about female obsession?
I hope so, but I don't know for sure because this week's upcoming horror movie is called Ashura. Ashura? I don't know how to pronounce this word. It's not English.
Okay.
I'm going to go Ashura.
Ashura.
Which is kind of French.
All right.
I guess. Possibly. Arabic.
Okay.
Okay, this clearly has been translated from another language, so I'm not going to be quite as mean as I normally am to these synopses.
Oh.
It's a good attempt at a translation.
There you go.
Four kids have fun at frightening each other and decide to go explore a condemned, probably haunted house. One of them disappears in mysterious circumstances. The three survivors try to forget until Samir reappears 25 years later. The group will eventually have to confront with the past.
Ooh. Well, that sounds fun. I mean, we've seen 100 movies with that premise, but...
Yeah.
You know, it's always nice to see it filtered.
But we haven't seen one from Morocco. So...
Exactly. That's my point. Yeah. It's always interesting to see these tropes filtered through other cultures. For example, that's how we got Rabid and Big Bad Wolf.
Correct. Which were both Israeli.
Exactly. Yes, that's, well, by Wolf's the same guy. Girl. Sorry, Big Bad Wolf. Both by the same guy.
It's Rabies, not Rabid.
I thought it was Rabid. You know what? I'm thinking of that other movie. Rabies. Right. You're right. It's Rabies. So there you go. All right. I'd be down to check that one out when it's done. Yay. Okay. Is that coming out soon? Is it going international?
Yeah, you won't have to wait too long because it says here VOD and DVD on December 14.
Ah, just in time for Christmas.
Exactly.
I'm sure that's what they were going for. Well, this is going to be the big Christmas movie this year.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a real important time of year in Morocco.
Actually, I don't know that Morocco isn't largely Christian. I know nothing about Morocco.
Me neither. Not a thing.
All right.
Honestly.
There you go. All right. So rather than embarrassingly try and speculate, let's move on to movies we actually did watch this week.
Yeah. So as we mentioned, we watched Single White Female. So we'll start there. After dumping her fiance, Allison takes in a roommate. It was nuts.
So, I think we watched for the show years ago, right? The Roommate, which was the college set remake of this movie.
Yes, we did.
And
it's the only thing I remember
about
that
we
watched it.
Well, like, the thing that I found so puzzling, right, is everyone said it was a remake of this. And I assumed they were right. I hadn't watched this movie since it came out. So I hadn't seen this movie in, like, 20 years when I watched Roommate, right? And watching this again with having seen Roommate more recently, I'm like, it is, like, I hope they got sued because of how close this thing is.
Oh.
Like, it's kind of crazy how close that, like, that remake was. Down to the fact that literally there's a character in that, a plot point is that she has a gay friend who the main, who the villain, like, beats up and keeps locked in their apartment. Who is the, you know, becomes important at the climax of the movie. Like, that is how close the two of them were. I find it kind of insane that they were that close. So, yeah.
It's possible it is just a straight remake and it just wasn't advertised as such.
It's possible, but I didn't see the name of the person who wrote the novel on Roommate's thing, because this time watching it, I found out it was based on a novel and I don't remember the roommate saying it was. Which, by the way, they changed the title from the novel to make it sound like the main character is not racist, which I approve of.
I think they just changed it because it's shorter and easier.
It is. It's just, I gotta say, single white female seeks same. Kind of makes it sound like she only wanted a white roommate.
Well, it's SFW seeks same, and that's just not going to make for a very good movie title.
That's true. And it's SWF, but yes.
That's whatever.
But anyway, I gotta say, creepy movie. Genuinely creepy movie. Like,
I saw this a long, long time ago.
Yeah,
and
same as me.
So remember, like, not the whole thing, obviously, but I do. I remembered a good deal about it.
The thing that got me was I had remembered a moment in a movie, and I didn't remember it was from this movie until I watched it. And I'm like, oh, that's the image that's been stuck in my head for so long. And that was the movie, the moment that makes me go,
which is the dog.
Yeah, not the dog dying, although that was incredibly traumatic. The moment where she, like, idly just brutally kicks a dog.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was not okay with that. Because again, that puppy's not acting. And it's not acting. It doesn't know this is a movie. And it got shoved while it was trying to eat. And I really worried about that dog.
No. I'm sure he grew up happy and healthy.
I really hope so. I hope he became a famous acting dog. But oof, that scene was rough to watch. So anyway, it's Steven Weber plays the boyfriend. Right? Steven Weber plays the boyfriend. I had completely forgotten about the like third of the plot that is Bridget Fonda trying to deal with an unbelievably scummy business relationship.
Yeah, me too.
That's like a third of the movie. And I didn't remember any of that.
She gets that guy good too. Good for her. Way to go, like, Bridget Fonda.
Is this the first time like ransomware was used as a plot in a movie? Because she does a ransomware attack on the guy and I loved it.
That's not really accurate.
Well, no.
She has, so...
That's true.
She designed this program to, I guess, showcase fashion in a virtual space. And Steven Tobolowsky is the client, and he, like, completely, they go for lunch, she gives him a quote, and he, like, I don't think so, and then, like, offers her what you assume to be a pretty insulting amount of money. And he's like, well, I looked into your past and I know that you're not starving. So I think you're worth this much money. She's like, well, I need the business. So I guess I'm just going to put up with your crap. But he hasn't been paying her.
Yep.
And she has it built into the program that if she doesn't receive her last payment, it will shut down and delete.
Yeah, she's like put in a secret thing where if she doesn't enter in a password at a certain time, it's going to wipe all of his hard drive. So all of his stock, all the pictures, all the work he did, and the program. And I'm like, yes!
And
I was so proud of her in that moment.
The crowning moment in that whole scene is the woman who works for Stephen Tobolowsky has this little smirk on her face. Because she knows that he's an asshole and he just got his comeuppance.
Oh, wasn't that beautiful?
That was great. Just, yeah, that, oh, like.
That made me, that scene made me so happy. It is.
By that woman.
Such a nice little detail to put in there, you know? They didn't have to put in that detail. Loved it.
I hope it was a choice that she made. Be like, I know this guy. Scum. He's a terrible employer. Takes advantage of his female employees. Is in the process of doing exactly that when he finds out that Bridget Fonda programmed his software to shut down.
Oh, it's such a beautiful scene. Like, it really is. Yeah. No, I loved that. I absolutely loved that. Yeah, that scene was really exciting. But yeah, so she's stuck. She's got a rent-controlled apartment, and it's, I mean, the building, you know, is in bad shape. But under, and
it's a huge apartment.
It's gigantic. Like high ceilings, it's a big deal in five New York rooms. City
to have an apartment that big.
Oh, absolutely. And
to be that cheap.
Oh, yeah. She would never give that out for any reason. Like, she would never give that apartment up for any reason, I have to imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like she's got the best apartment in the world. And she's like, but she doesn't want to be alone. And so she's like, I'll have a roommate around. And at the same time, she's emotionally shattered because her fiance went and had sex with his ex. Yeah. And so she has decided to throw him out. And so at her most vulnerable, Jennifer Jason Leigh shows up. And like in a perfect, like, cause she's found a roommate to who she's probably going to give the place. But unfortunately, Jennifer Jason Leigh shows up exactly as she's having an emotional breakdown and talks her through the emotional breakdown. So Jennifer Jason Leigh ends up getting the apartment. Oh,
yes.
You fool.
Yeah. Well, bad news for Bridget Fonda.
Well, worse news for Stephen Weber, I would say. Like, worse news for Stephen Weber.
Jennifer Jason Leigh becomes completely obsessed with Bridget Fonda.
Almost immediately.
To the point where she has herself made to look like her.
Oh.
Like, the same haircut. And it is upsetting.
Yeah, it is. And she has the correct reaction. And, like, what I love is that Bridget Fonda has the what is happening reaction. Like, a completely honest and correct reaction when she sees what Jennifer Jason Leigh has done to herself. She's just like, what the? And I'm like, yeah, no, that is the right way to respond to this decision on Jennifer Jason Leigh's part. Yeah. But she like Jennifer, please.
No, I can say like too, quite often we watch these movies where it's like obvious to everybody that one person is gaslighting another or something to that effect. And the person who's being gaslit just acts like an idiot the whole time.
Yeah.
And I have to say this, to Bridget Fonda's credit, she didn't act like a panicky idiot.
Yeah.
Or not even a panicky idiot, just a moron. So no, she has realistic reactions to things that Jennifer Jason Leigh does. She starts repairing her relationship with her fiance, and Jennifer Jason Leigh is upset about it. And Bridget Fonda's like, well, I'm sorry you're upset, but
yeah,
I can't help the way that I feel and I am getting back together with him, and like, you know, and I said it wasn't going to happen, but we can't predict the future, and you are going to have to move out eventually, like, just, you know, deal with it.
And her response is to murder the puppy that they got together
as a way to keep her, well, because they were so Bridget Fonda was going to go away with Stephen Weber for the weekend, and Jennifer Jason Leigh just, you know, she can't let that happen, so she kills the puppy. And then so there's this, like, I'm not going to say clever manipulation, but there's a manipulation that's taking place that Bridget Fonda just, she can't see it.
Yeah.
Which is reasonable.
I think it's realistic. Given, like, I think
what
it's,
she's going through.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I think it's really well written how effectively Jennifer Jason Leigh manipulates Bridget Fonda. Like, because, again, she just uses everything that Bridget Fonda is insecure about. quite effectively. Like, I was very impressed at the writing and what her character was up to. Because, again, I had forgotten most of this movie. Again, except for a dog being endangered and Steven Weber being killed by a high heel.
I totally remember that.
Yeah, that's a big takeaway.
Didn't quite remember the rape that happened beforehand.
I know.
Oh, my
Jesus, that was a rough scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, with her nightmarish, you know, just like saying, this is how I'm going to split them up. I'll go pretend to be her and have sex with Steven Weber to prove that he's a cheater. I'm like, I feel like this isn't going to work out the way you think it is. And then it doesn't. Yeah. But she's crazy, so you understand why she thought that would work.
And, like, you don't, you spend part of the movie not liking Steven Weber because he slept with his ex. Well, I didn't mean to. I didn't know it was going to happen. It's like, dude, you fucking made a choice. When you fall, did you just fall down and your dick entered her? Like, that's not how that happened.
No, I know.
So when he gets raped, that's essentially what happens.
Oh, yeah.
By Jennifer Jason Leigh. Like, you really do sort of, like, feel
For
him. And he's like, of course I'm going to tell her. I'm going to tell her right now.
Yeah. And she's, because she pulls the whole, if you get out of her life, she'll never have to find out, you know, how you betrayed her again. And he's like, what are you, crazy? Of course I'm going to tell her. You sexually assaulted me.
Yeah. And he's committed to making this relationship work because he fucked it up the first time and realized, you know, that he'd made a giant mistake. So.
Oh, yeah. No, it's, it's kind of amazing. Like, the characters don't do what you expect they're going to do a bunch of times in the movie, and it's always satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's pretty darn well written. I especially liked, again, that, I especially liked the scene where Stephen Tobol, like, gets his comeuppance, because he's, you know, wants to stop the ransomware attack, so he rushes over to the apartment. And she and Bridget Fonda's disappeared, but one time he found her at the gay neighbors upstairs. So he goes to check there, and that's where she's being held hostage. And it's just a wonderful scene because he slaps Jennifer Jason Leigh around, and he's such a misogynist creep that he's like, "Oh, that's all." And Bridget Fonda's like, "You got to watch out." And he's like, "No, I've taken care of her." Like, dude, what? And the thing is,
and I don't like that he comes to her rescue because it's like, no, this guy is disgusting.
But
like,
then he immediately fails.
He shouldn't be a hero.
Yeah, I know.
But then,
and it's like, and that's the thing. Like, you're right. Like, if it had posited him as a hero, but the film doesn't. He screws up because he's such a sexist creep. And of course he underestimates what Jennifer Jason Leigh is capable of. Like, it's well done. Like, cause they don't, even in a scene where she's kind of being rescued by the guy who tried to rape her earlier in the movie, right? Even though she's being rescued by him, the film doesn't, like, let him get redeemed at all.
Yeah.
It's an interesting choice, and I really liked that. One very dumb thing Bridget Fonda does is that she agrees, you know, to try and keep Jennifer Jason Leigh from murdering her, she agrees to go away with her and start a new life. Right? And then so she does a whole thing where it's like, go get Steven Weber's credit card to pay for some first class seats. And then she tries to write a help me, I'm being held hostage thing on the computer. Yeah. And then she gets caught, and that's when she ends up tied up with duct tape. And I'm watching that scene and I'm like,
no, she was tied up. She was tied up with duct tape. Before,
oh, you're right. She was tied up before.
Untied to do to book the airline tickets.
Yes.
And then tied up again.
You're right. I got that backwards. There's a lot of being tied up in this movie.
There basically is. But it's all at the end.
It's so all right at the end.
It's easy to, like, get confused. Who gets tied up when?
But what bothered me was, it's like, you've been really smart. Like, yeah, I've been finding all of your stuff believable. But she's threatening you with a gun, which is why you're doing all of this. Just go to the airport with her. Spoiler alert, she can't take a gun on the plane. So, just go to the airport with her.
Then the movie has to leave the apartment.
No, I know. And the movie is all set at the apartment.
We can't have that.
It's true. It is set in, like, three apartments, the whole movie. But anyway.
Sex club.
Oh, that's true, yes. And a sex club, briefly.
A fetish club, I guess.
A fetish club where she goes to...
I don't know why that scene is in there. You could have excised that for the movie and it would have been fine.
Yeah, right? It's like just such it's a strange weird. Scene to have her like recreating, trying to recreate Bridget Fonda's sex life. It's very weird, that scene.
But she doesn't really know anything about.
Exactly, right? Like all she is like, oh,
no,
you
she
look...
just gets dressed up. She goes to this.
And tries like, to find someone who looks like Steven Weber.
Yeah.
It's a
but
weird
I don't know why,
thing.
Like, why go to that weird club? I don't know. It just doesn't need to be there.
It doesn't really add anything except to make her seem creepier.
No.
No.
And Bridget Fonda doesn't learn anything
new about the important. Character as a consequence. Yeah.
She already knows that she's crazy at this point, so.
Well, I think it's entirely possible that as with the casual nudity right at the start of the movie, it's just trying, like, something they did for the studio to make the movie sexier, because this was the age of the sexy thriller. It wouldn't surprise
well,
me.
Maybe they just, I don't know.
Think about
they,
it.
That was a swing and a miss, I think.
Well, no, I'm just saying, it's like, right at the start of the movie, you get casual nudity from Bridget Fonda, then, yeah. like, a third of the way into the movie, you get a sex scene with her and Steven Weber, and then, like, another 20 minutes into the movie, you get the fetish club. Right, so
no,
it's
you
like,
get some casual nudity from Jennifer Jason
as
Lee
well,
also because
right.
she's not shy.
No, she's not. So yeah. I just think they wanted to make sure the nudity and the sex was like scattered throughout the entire film rather than all front loaded. And so they're like, oh, there's too long without any nudity or salaciousness. Let's get in another one
but
of those.
There's no
scenes.
Nudity at the club. That's
I know that is the weird part that there's no nudity at the club. Like, it's an extreme fetish club, and everyone's got gimp wear. Like, nobody's having sex in public, though, which seems weird.
No. So, whatever.
No, I mean, it's not a problem by any means. It's just something we thought was a little strange.
Doesn't need to be there, honestly. We don't learn anything.
No, you could have cut that film out. You could have cut that out of the film with no trouble at all. And it still would have been a pretty, you know, a perfectly sexy thriller. So, I totally agree with you.
One thing I did like, though, and I thought this was, you know, I praise the movie for this.
Go.
Is the upstairs neighbor Gary? Is that his name?
Yep. Gary or Greg? One of the other.
Greg. Doesn't matter. Upstairs neighbor guy.
Greg was the name of the guy in Fear. He must be Gary.
Friend to Bridget Fonda, who just, like, you find out that he's gay.
Yeah.
Doesn't really matter, and I feel like we didn't even really need to know that about him. Like, he didn't have to say it out loud, but also he's just like, he's not flaming or anything nope. like that. He's just, you wouldn't know.
I think the reason they established that he's gay is he has a habit of listening in on the drama in her life. Right? Through
well,
the air
I mean,
vents in the building.
You not? It's coming up through the vents.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Anybody would listen.
But
straight,
it's like,
gay,
but he's
not,
the,
like...
but my point is, if he wasn't a gay guy, the audience might read it as he's a creepy stalker. Whereas because he's a gay guy, the audience read it as like, oh, no, he's just a guy who enjoys drama and kind of like, he should tell her about it, but he enjoys the drama too much to tell her about the air vent. So it's like,
I don't read it that way at all because. Anybody would listen in.
Okay. You make a
seriously.
Good point. That's true.
Anybody would.
Okay. I'm not going to debate that. I think you're probably right. I think it's a nice, he's a good character and you're right. They don't make a big deal of the fact that he's gay. Like it's
right.
not
that
centralized
other movies
at all.
Would make a big deal. Like, and Fear did the same thing where you find like, oh, you know, he's not a threat to you because he's gay.
Although, to be fair, that was cut out of the movie. The fact that he's gay was cut out of the movie. Because, no, I told you that because I went and I researched it. In the movie, she says, you don't have anything to worry about. It's just Greg. And he's like, but I didn't see who it was and I freaked out. Yeah, and later, and the meaning of that line one, that line was that Greg was gay, and that's why he didn't have to be worried about Greg.
Oh, well, I think I probably just assumed it anyway because she's like
because of how she
whatever.
Acts. You're absolutely right.
Whatever. The point is, there was this, I guess, this period in time where you had gay characters who were not wearing it on their sleeve,
yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, and that's the thing, you're right. Like, it's completely, the character could not be gay, and nothing about him in the movie would change at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is perfectly fine to have a male neighbor who's in no way attracted to Bridget Fonda. Like, that wouldn't have changed the film in the least.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was a nice touch. So overall, I really liked this. I liked it more now than I did the first time. I think it's a solid thriller. You know, I had a very good time with it.
Terrible ending, though, like all these 90s movies. No. It just ends.
It just and then you stops. Get like,
ugh, this one you get like a little bit, like some voiceover there right at the end. But
well, it's actually really similar to how, and I know you didn't see this, but it's actually, remember how I said how The Good Son ends with like, she drops the thing and then we just, he hugs the mom.
Drops the thing?
Yeah. That's what I call Macaulay Culkin. I call him the thing. It's our pet name. Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
Drops Macaulay Culkin. Right? Drops Macaulay Culkin and then hugs Elijah Wood. And then he does his line about how it's like, I'll always wonder if she regrets dropping her son, but I'll never ask. And then it just stops. In the same way,
right.
Like Jennifer Jason Leigh dies, cut immediately to her like doing a voiceover. It's like, it was really tough getting over Steven's funeral. Right. And then blah, 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 blah. And then the movie just stops. Like they're very similar endings.
Well, no, you get a little bit about Jennifer Jason Leigh, right? Because she snoops.
Yeah.
Because Jennifer Jason Leigh has told her a bunch of lies about her childhood. And so Bridget Fonda snoops around. You find out that Jennifer Jason Leigh was lying. And then you get a little bit. It's like, well, her parents told me this and her parents told me that. And it's like, okay, we know she's crazy.
Yeah. I know.
It's like, yeah.
I know, it's frustrating. Yeah. And that, by the way, the single dumbest thing she does in the entire movie is, like, she goes and she sneaks through and, like, reads all of Jennifer Jason Leigh's stuff. She's like, I'm going to find out what's going on with her. She does it while Jennifer Jason Leigh is in the shower. Like,
I know, wait for her to go to work.
She has a job. You work from home. Right? She has a job. She's going to leave for 4 hours. Do it then.
Right? You don't have to, like, yeah, oh.
So you don't have to do really it this second.
I thought the exact same thing.
Okay, like, good. Yeah, that really bothered me.
You don't need to rush through this and then risk getting caught.
Yeah, which is, spoiler alert, kind of what happens.
Oh. No, she doesn't get caught snooping.
No, she doesn't get caught snooping, but, like, it's that within a second of getting caught snooping. So it's like, yeah, you're creating problems for yourself sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, speaking of effective thrillers.
I was saying, speaking of creating problems.
Well, that too. All right, go.
All right, our second movie tonight is The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. A family hires a nanny to help care for their baby boy. She seems perfect, but what they don't know is she's out for revenge. Also, she's nuts.
She's so nuts.
So I guess the theme this week is bitches be cray.
Yes. No, bitches certainly be cray in this week's movie. Not gonna disagree with that at all.
So I have never seen this movie.
Oh,
before.
Really? I had seen this movie.
Yeah. No, I never saw it.
Oh, wow.
I knew what it was about.
Of course.
And I found it to be needlessly long.
It's about 15 minutes longer than it needed to be. I'm going to agree with you completely.
And I honestly, I don't think you needed to know who the nanny was. Because right at the start, they're like, there are no mysteries for the audience here.
Yeah, why do they show us? And that's what I was going to ask you. Like, can you think of a reason that they show us her finding out that her husband was a scumbag, finding out their life is destroyed, having a miscarriage, like, just have her turn up at the house and save those reveals for the end of the movie.
It's not a miscarriage. The baby dies.
Well, yeah, that's what a miscarriage is.
No, it doesn't. No, that's not.
It's still a miscarriage, even if it happens at 8 months. It's still a miscarriage.
No, the baby. It's not.
Okay.
This isn't a miscarriage.
All right. The point is, she is under so much stress from her scumbag husband killing himself and being revealed to be a scumbag in the world that she has difficulties with her pregnancy and the baby dies. Is that okay? If I say it that way?
Okay. That is more accurate.
All right. So the baby dies, and we see all of that. And then we see her in the hospital bed, finding out when it is reported on the news who the victim of this molester was. It's just reported on the news, which is crazy.
But I don't know when these, like, protection laws came into effect, but I feel like that wouldn't be reported widely. That, his first accuser is so-and-so who lives at 123 Maple Lane.
I know, right? Thank you. I found that so bizarre.
Right, and she didn't take him to court, or, like, she didn't sue him, but it's her fault that he's dead now. Like, what?
Okay.
Wow.
That seems like an abrupt thing to put in the news. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And it's like, then when I'm watching, I'm like, why is any of this in the movie when if you just, like, have the evil doctor molest her, have her accuse the evil doctor, have him kill himself, right? And then cut to 6 months later, and a mysterious nanny shows up, and she's perfect. And then you reveal... And you reveal, as the characters find out, what's going on with her and why she's crazy. Like, why would you not structure it that way? It was just baffling to me, this film's structure. I didn't get it at all.
Yeah.
And as you said, the movie's too long.
It doesn't make sense.
So you can cut out, like, 5 minutes there, improve the film's pacing, and just make a better movie overall.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really, really weird choice. To include that scene.
I would also add in a little bit more of Julianne Moore.
Yeah.
Who is, like, suspicious of Rebecca De Mornay.
De Mornay, right, like, from the start.
Exactly. Yeah. The moment she lays the eyes on her, she doesn't like her. She knows there's something up with this woman. And so I kind of wish there was a little bit more investigation.
Yeah.
Like, she's not a big part of the movie, and it kind of happens all at once.
Yeah.
That Julianne Moore kind of figures out what the deal is, and then she, well, spoiler warning, dies immediately.
I know, right after finding out what's going on. And, I mean, I also think they could have done a little more work to establish why they need a nanny. Because...
They really don't.
Her justification for needing a nanny is... Well, I'm going to be supervising the building of a greenhouse in our backyard, so I should probably have another person here to take care of my kids. Yeah, but you're not actually building it, are you? Well, no.
You're not doing anything.
Supervising production. Like, you work, like, you don't have a job. Like, you're a full-time mom, and you also want to get back into botany, so you're having a greenhouse built. But, like... That doesn't take a lot of your time in the day, does it? I didn't understand.
They really don't need the nanny. It's an extravagance, to be perfectly honest, for this family.
So,
how
much of the movie did you spend waiting for them to reveal that he was an architect? Because he's not an architect. But it's like 30 minutes, I'm like, come on, reveal that he's an architect. I need to know that he's an architect. He's not an architect.
But they're living in Seattle, so...
He's got to be an architect, right? No, turns out he's an engineer, but still. Pretty close.
I mean, engineer, architect, it's all the same.
Yeah, potato, potato. don't at us, engineers and architects. We know what we did. But anyway... Oh my god. But yeah, like, it is a ridiculous extravagance having a full-time, is she a live-in nanny? She's always
there. Yeah, she lives in the basement.
Yeah, she, like, lives in the basement.
There's a scene where she's shown to her room.
I know. But I'm just pointing out how ludicrous it is that they even need a live-in nanny. Like, you're not ultra, like, I know ultra-rich people who don't work have live-in help because they're just lazy and don't want to do anything. But it's like, these people aren't that rich. What?
Well, it was the 90s. So.
It was the 90s, okay. But it's like, these don't feel like the rich enough people to, like, just be like, oh no, I just don't want to do anything, so I'll pay people to do things for me. But yeah, it just seemed weird that they needed a nanny at all. And I don't think it would have been hard for them to, like, make her a novelist or a lawyer or just something. Well, probably not a lawyer, because then but she's got to be out of the house more, so there you go. Like, give her a job to explain why she's taken the eye off the ball of her family and letting this crazy woman take over, like, replace her with her kids. Like, just give us something.
But because she's in the house, and then you have this other woman in the house, it does create this situation wherein she should be more aware of what's going on in her own home because she's fucking there all the time.
Yeah.
So you do kind of have that
aspect
conflict,
of it.
I guess, at play throughout the movie because she doesn't go anywhere. She runs around town and stuff. But yeah, it's like, okay, you're at home overseeing the building of this greenhouse. That's nice. But there's this other woman hanging around who is, like, doing everything she can to destroy your life. And you can't see that?
I know. Like, she's wearing your perfume, for God's sake.
Yeah. And it did bother me that she not allowed herself to be manipulated. That's not really the right phrasing. But that she... there's no reason for her to be as, what's the word I'm looking for? Not self-conscious, but, as concerned for her marriage as she is. Cause it's this well established that, like, these two are committed to each other and they love each other and they have a great relationship. And Rebecca De Mornay shows up and, like,
the fact that
makes a comment about how hot she is, and the guy's like, oh, whatever. So the fact that Rebecca De Mornay can, like, needle, I don't remember the mother's name.
Not important. It's Annabella Sciorri. You don't have to remember that character.
Yeah, needle her the way that she does and make her question or second guess her husband's fidelity. It just didn't work for me. I kept
waiting for a reveal that he had cheated on her in the past, and that's why she's so paranoid now. But the only source of her paranoia seems to be that he used to date Julianne Moore.
Yeah, but everybody used to date someone.
That's my point, yeah. Like, and it's like, okay, it's a little weird that Julianne Moore, who he dated for years, is still in your lives, but he's never alone with her. I guess, except for the one scene where he is alone with her, but she's already paranoid before then. Like, she's already worried about the relationship before he sneaks off to plan her surprise birthday party.
But she and Julianne Moore are good friends.
Yeah.
And, like, I have a good friend in my life, and, like, he and I dated for a hot minute when we were 14. It's like, it doesn't mean anything.
No, not at all.
Yeah,
it's weird that she's as nervous. And again, had there been something in the plot that he had cheated on her in the past or something like that, her behavior would make more sense. But he just seems to be, like, a great husband whose only problem is, like, he works a lot and isn't always around to see what's going on with his wife.
So he's like, he's a little, not checked out, but...
No, he is more absent from the homemaking duties than he probably should be. But honestly, he seems pretty great with his daughter.
No, he is. He has a great relationship with his daughter. And when people come to him and it's like, there's something wrong here, he's like, okay, I can tell you're upset. Let's deal with this.
Absolutely.
Yes. Whereas other husbands in other movies, you'd be like, oh, you're just being hysterical. You hysterical woman. Like, so it doesn't do that.
By the way, I love that line reading. I would change nothing about that line reading. That was fantastic. Please continue. That made me so happy. Okay.
Is your womb wandering? Is that the problem?
Damn. Take that, 19th century doctors.
Right? But I did, like, as much, you know, as I had a problem with the length of the film and Rebecca De Mornay's presence to begin with.
Yeah.
She does a good job.
Oh, yeah.
Tearing this family apart.
Well, and it's a great performance by her. Like, the character has a really good plot, and she is a great performance.
It is. Another great performance. The real unsung hero of this movie is Ernie Hudson.
I was about to say, should we end with the real MVP of this movie, Ernie Hudson?
Yes, and I got, the moment he was introduced, I just got so upset.
Yeah.
Because I was so worried something bad was going to happen.
I know.
And so I spent the whole movie just like on tenterhooks. I'm like, don't hurt Ernie Hudson, please.
Plays a guy with mental challenges who has been, there's the thing called the New Day Foundation that finds jobs for people who are mentally challenged in one way or another. And so he has problems speaking. He has, problems connecting with people. Like he's just, he has a childlike element to him at times.
Yeah. But he's perfectly capable he's a handyman essentially for them.
He is there to build their new
fence. They find jobs to keep him employed because they really like him.
They like having him around so much that even after he's done building the fence, as the dad said, well, we'll find something else for you to do around here.
Yeah.
Because it's just, he's a nice guy. Everybody likes him. It's such a, it's so wonderfully positive, like their relationship with Ernie Hudson is so pure and positive, and he seems like such a wonderful character.
And like, she completely destroys it.
I know. And it's so, so brutal.
Oh, hard to watch.
And the thing is, and it's like, it's really hard to watch because he sees her breastfeeding the baby and he knows like,
and he knows it's like,
he knows it's horrible. And she comes out and she's essentially like, if you tell anyone, I will destroy you. And he's terrified.
She's like, they're going to believe me before they believe you.
Yeah, my version of the story will be much better than yours.
And she's right.
And she's, and the brutal thing is like, it's not like, while he's thinking about what she could do, what he should do, like while he's still in the process of trying to decide what to do, she plants like the daughter's underwear and stuff in his shed and then calls the cops on him and saying he's been, too close with the daughter. I'm like, oh my God.
It's awful.
It's such a hard scene to watch. And it's like, and the daughter trying to figure out why Ernie Hudson is has been taken away.
Yeah.
Oh, and the mother trying to like reach out to the daughter and it's like, without like freaking her out, find out if she's been molested. Like these are really tough scenes to watch.
Yeah. And also because, but like, Rebecca De Mornay is such a master manipulator. She and the daughter have a secret.
Yep.
And then plants the idea that her daughter is keeping a secret in the mother's mind.
Yeah.
So that when the mother goes to talk to the daughter about secrets and the kid's just like, everything's fine. I got nothing to tell you. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God.
It's excellent. Like, her plan is excellent and the performances are fantastic. Like, our problems with this movie are the pacing and the structure. Like, and parts of the structure.
Yes.
Right? Like, it should be shorter. We shouldn't find out Rebecca. Like, we should know Rebecca De Mornay's evil. Like, it's fine if we watch all of the evil stuff we do. She does.
But we don't need to know why right
exactly.
Away.
It's the motive. You know? The motive they should have held on till the end. And, by the way, we haven't mentioned him at all. John DeLancey is so creepy.
So, he's he was in this movie. That's, like, the only thing I knew about this movie is that Q was in it. And so,
thank you for calling him
begins,
Q,
I'm
by
like,
the way.
I just don't see him as, like, the husband. And it's like, oh, creepy doctor. Got it.
Yeah. He's and so that scene, good.
I want to talk about things that are hard to watch. Ugh.
I know. I was almost sick watching that movie.
So where uncomfortable.
The thing where he goes to do the pelvic exam and he like, carefully shows him putting on a glove to her. And then as he moves his hand down, strips it off and stuffs it in his pocket. Ugh.
Yeah.
So hard to watch.
And I have to know, I wonder if the nurse is complicit. She knows what's going on because the nurse is in the room.
Yes.
And then it's like, there's an excuse for her to leave.
Yeah.
I think she knows what's up.
She has right?
Yeah.
Especially because he's like, she's like, oh, I've got to go. He's like, oh, go take that call. And then also do these other things so you won't be back for a while. Like, the nurse has to know.
She has to know.
Exactly. Like, You've got the nurse in there with her to make sure she's comfortable. And then like this, and we know this isn't, and the reason I think we know that she has to know is because this isn't the, she's not his only victim.
Yeah.
So like the nurse, like regularly, this nurse is being told to step out of the room for one reason or another while he's doing a pelvic exam. So yeah, I'm pretty sure the nurse knew. Ugh.
Yeah. It's there should be other nurses' attendants in that office who could deal with whatever.
Oh, absolutely. But yeah. Just very hard to watch scene. Great performance by John DeLancey. I mean, everybody's really good in this movie.
Totally believable scumbag.
Absolutely. The thing is, like, everybody's really good in this movie. You know, even the child actor playing the daughter. Really good in this movie. What's that?
Her name.
Is that she's Matilda from Matilda?
I'm pretty sure it's the same kid. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, good performances. But yeah, she's really good in this movie and she's got a ton to do. Like everybody's good. If this film was just tighter and cut out a couple of scenes, like I think it would be remembered more than it is.
Yeah, I think so too.
It just kind of blows me away. Like, how I forgot this movie completely, you know? It was such a big movie when it came out. Like, everybody talked about it. It was a giant deal. And I saw it when it came out, and I just totally forgot everything about this movie until I rewatched it. It was so weird. I had no idea it was Julianne Moore playing the real estate agent.
I
don't
know why it was such a big deal, to be honest.
Oh, no, I mean, you know, like, it's just how memes work. Every now and then, something hits the cultural zeitgeist. And this movie was, like, it for months. Everybody talked about it. Everybody joked about it. People did comedy parodies of it on comedy shows.
Oh, I just remember ads on TV.
Oh, it was all over TV.
From that time.
They marketed the hell out of this. Yeah. And I believe, like, Rebecca De Mornay... I'm trying to remember what happened.
I guess, was she a big deal?
She became a big deal briefly because of this.
Because of this movie.
And also she started dating Leonard Cohen, of all people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was just the 90s were a weird time, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Like, again, try to imagine a world where a movie about, like, if young people of today are listening to us, imagine a world where the biggest movie in America for, like, 2 months is a thriller about a nanny trying to steal someone's family. Trying to steal a woman's family. Like, you can't imagine that, can you? But it happened. That was the 90s. It was a weird time. The biggest movie in America for a different 2 months period was about Sharon Stone, like, having sex with and murdering people on camera.
That's true. Like, yep.
The 90s were
and
weird.
Flashing her cooch.
Yes, she did. All right, so yeah.
Also, I haven't seen Basic Instinct, but I have seen
Basic Instinct
the
2?
Parody.
Oh.
No. Ah, shit, what's it called?
National Lampoon's whatever, yeah.
I think it's Fatal Instinct. Something along those lines. So they parody that scene. It's just a stuffed beaver.
Okay, that's pretty funny.
Sitting in a chair.
Wait, you've never seen Basic Instinct? Oh my god, we so have to watch Basic Instinct.
I guess the sexy thrillers just kind of passed you by. I might have just been too young for it.
No, absolutely. I think we were all too young for it when it came out. But I saw it eventually on cable. So update. We might be watching Basic Instinct next 90s November. That should
next
be fun.
Year.
Yeah. So I will, now that 90s November is ending... Like, I think the big takeaway is movies were better in the 90s than they are now. I think that's...
I don't know if that's
true. Okay, no, that's not true. theater, like, major theatrical releases were more varied and interesting in the 1990s than they are now. I think we can say that.
Are you forgetting that we watched The Babysitter? Have you already purged that from your memory banks?
Well, that was not a major theatrical release.
Like, but it was in theaters.
It was in theaters.
It
was
a movie that got made and was released.
I know. But overall, I'm not going to ask us to rank all of the movies from 90s November, because that would be crazy. But I think we can safely say that The Babysitter was the worst movie we watched for 90s November. Closely, you know, followed closely by The Crush.
I would argue that it's the worst movie we watched in like the last 6 months.
Yeah, you know what? You're
at
not wrong.
At least that movie is so
you're
bad.
Probably not wrong.
The Crush is bad for different reasons.
For completely
only because
different
Cary Elwes doesn't behave the way he should. He doesn't absolutely act like an adult man.
I know. Well, I just love that it's based on a true story, but he's like, okay, what if instead of doing the smart thing, I was a complete idiot at every turn? That's going
to
be this
movie.
And that's
movie. What I'm saying. Like, you know, in contrast to Bridget Fonda, who...
makes
you know, is making,
choices.
Trying
yeah.
to make rational choices. You got Cary Elwes, who's, maybe he like thinks about the right thing to do and then does the opposite.
Every time he does the opposite.
I need to have a conversation with her about boundaries. We can still be friends. It's like, what? No, you can't be friends.
Do you not understand what the word boundaries means? Oh, God,
she
that
is
movie.
She's sexually obsessed with you. You know this.
Yep. But what would you say the best movie?
Too busy being flattered.
He was. He absolutely was. So what do you think the best movie of 90s November was?
Ooh.
It's tough.
It is tough. Maybe I mean, I did enjoy Fear. Like, I liked it the first time I saw it. And I liked it again. Mark Wahlberg's tucked in shirt notwithstanding.
Well, the weird part is we're going to be unanimous on this because I was about to ask, is it Fear? I really think Fear is probably the best movie of 90s November we've seen. Like, it's just, it's so effective. Like, everybody's so good.
It checks
so
all
effective.
The boxes. Seattle, architect.
Like, Seattle, architecture, uncomfortably sexual children. Like, just all the 90s stuff in one place.
Alyssa Milano.
Alyssa Milano. There you go. Alyssa Milano. oh, my God. So, yes, I think it's the best one. Because, and again, everybody's doing a great job. It's one of the best Marky Mark performances there is. Right? I really think it's one of his best performances as an actor. And I think I've seen all of them. Like, I don't know.
You have not seen all of them because you haven't seen, I was about to say Event Horizon. That's not right. Deepwater.
No, I haven't seen Deepwater Horizon, but I've seen Lone Survivor. So, you know. No,
and
I haven't
seen Event Horizon.
I haven't seen the Boston bombing one, and I haven't seen Deepwater Horizon. So I will watch those two.
I haven't seen the Boston bombing one.
I doubt that either of them contain a better Marky Mark performance than Fear does.
I don't know, Deepwater Horizon is just like such a good movie all around.
Okay.
Like Peter Berg.
He knows
what he's doing.
No,
oh
obviously.
My God.
He's a fantastic director.
Yeah.
The only thing I have to say about him as a director is that why does he insist on only working with Mark Wahlberg?
Oh.
He just makes more Mark Wahlberg movies. And I'm like, there are other actors out there, dude. Like, come on. Mix it up. You're a great director.
I'm just a big Marky Mark fan.
He
I don't
is a
know.
Big Marky Mark fan. It does.
Got stock in Mark
way.
Wahlberg.
Yes, maybe.
Or Wahlburgers.
Maybe he has stock in Wahlburgers. And he's trying to increase the value of the brand.
Wahlburger.
Crazier things have happened. Like, that's not the weirdest reason anybody ever may put someone in a movie. All right. So yeah, Fear, probably the best movie of 90s November. I will admit to still being very fond of Hideaway. Like, I'm not going to lie. I had a good time with Hideaway.
It's all right.
I know. It's all right. But it's just it. But that's because of my childhood love of Dean Koontz, you know? Like, it's really. But I think this has gone really well. I look forward to next 90s November where we watch things like Basic Instinct and Shattered and, you know, like.
And I was going to pitch like 90s sci-fi or something along those lines.
Oh, okay. Well, we could do that too. But I mean, I do want you to watch Basic Instinct, though.
And I want to watch Deep Rising, so.
Well, we'll probably watch Deep Rising before then. I'm sure we can justify watching Deep Rising sooner than that. But we'll figure it out. In any event, do you have any narcissism you would like to watch?
No.
Okay.
Not at this time.
Not at this time. Well, I have a video game coming out in a week and a half. So everybody, if you like video games, you'll love Hogaru Presents The House with Too Many Zombies in It, which is the story of a zombie apocalypse and a guy trying to stop it and not doing a great job.
So everybody's favorite trope.
Everybody's favorite trope. God choosing someone to stop the zombie apocalypse, then not telling them how to do that, and the guy kind of just bumbling through. So it's a fun game. That's all. I'll leave it there. Okay, so be sure to check that out. Let's see what else. Other stuff at the Hidden Object Guru channel and Profiling Criminal Minds, the podcast. Is there any other way to get in touch with us?
You can visit the Ava blog at theava.com. You can stream old episodes there. You can leave us a comment and tell us about your favorite 90s November movie. You can send us an email at theava@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. If you're listening on an app, rate, review, subscribe. Oh, I'm getting faster and faster.
So much better. I'm going to encourage you to do all of those things. And until next time, I've been Count Vargelon.
I've been DM.
Thanks for watching and have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.